Welcome to the Technori Podcast. I'm your host, Scott Catoon. Joining me on today's show is the CEO of Relish Works, Mandy Tovehaven. This conversation goes all over the place, as it should, but it also centers back on something that was near and dear to me as I started my first company using this infrastructure, and now they're using it. Gordon Foods is the parent, well, not even really the parent company, it's a separate entity, but Gordon Foods has been around for like 120 years in the food service business, and they know it as well as anybody. But they were smart enough to recognize that if you want true innovation, you want to be around for a long time, you need to invest in it as a long-term plan, not a quick patch fix-up. And there really aren't too many people better for the job than Mandy. She used to work at Doblin. I worked with some people at Doblin years ago when I was at Northwestern on some studies. And ultimately, what I learned from them was that we might reference it in the show, is 10 types of innovation. And it's taking they call it innovation construction. It's taking a very, very structured approach to building the infrastructure that you're going to build all of your innovation on. And that might be internal improvement. That might be blue sky, brand new ideas. Most companies do it very poorly. They just chase after things that plug and play into their mechanism rather than being like, hey, you know, we've got a core business. It's great. We happen to have a lot of information about our customers. And we know some of the problems that they're going to be having or experiencing, or they do already, that we can maybe help solve. And it has nothing to do with our core business. It is just another business we create from within ourselves. And that's what Relish Works does. And they do it really well. And they stay on this kind of concept of total innovation, which is, if you looked at your investment, people, time, money, all of it in innovation, in creating new, you break it into 60% incremental, 20% acquired, and 10% new idea. And if you take that approach to everything you do, and you know why you're doing it, you know what's possible, what's actually viable, and what you want, collectively, you can do a lot of cool stuff. Sometimes it's fancy like Apple. Sometimes it's structural like Merrick moving logistical things across the ocean. There's a lot of different things you can do, but you got to know why and how you're doing it. And that is something that I think Relish Works does really well. And they obviously have, which will be plugged. October 16th is the deadline to apply as a startup in the food space to be a part of the foundry and actually take advantage of sort of, you know, not only the Gordon Food Resources, but also the structure, the innovation structure, and learn how to be successful at the enterprise level. And we spend the majority of the conversation talking about just that. But it also leads me into conversations that I have off the record with people. And that is a conversation about working with enterprise. The number of SaaS companies that we deal with every day, that we see every day, that we invest in every day, that are trying to solve business-to-business or B2B-to-C problems by creating an app or creating a SaaS platform, all this stuff. Yes, you're creating something brand new, and if it's smart and it's good and it'll work, great. But if you are, in order to be successful, and success being whatever the hell you wrote on your business plan, to be successful, if it includes working side by side or full integration with enterprise companies, before you even get into the actual app or whatever the solve is, you've got to have your infrastructure built so that enterprise can work with you. You might be solving a major pain point for them, and that's great. And they might want to work with you. But if they meet you and they find out really quickly that you're not set up to work with enterprise, you don't have data security down, you're not on the same, you know, your cloud storage, everything is not set up the way that they're set up, they can't work with you even if they wanted to. So I'm just saying this to all of the startup founders out there who are building the next new cool thing. You need to do your research and understand, who is our customer? Who is our partners? And what do they work on? How do they work? That has to be a part of your style and part of your strategy, or you will not find success working with enterprise. That is why people complain about the slowdown of working with enterprise. You hold the keys to solve that. Your startup inbox is brought to you by ActiveCampaign. See why 65,000 businesses use ActiveCampaign for their marketing by signing up at activecampaign.com/technori. Get your first 2 months for free. This is my conversation with the CEO of Relish Works, Mandy Tovehaven. I don't think that there's a better name for an innovation hub in the food industry than Relish Works on so many levels. The idea, first off, and we're going to waste the first minute of this podcast talking about Relish, because I think that relish is amazing. I love pickles, for one. I think relish is amazing, but I think that the little mind trick that Relish Works name gives us is that, like, relish is like a major part of a lot of foods that we eat. It's just a part of it. And it's the start. It's like the first thing you put on your hot dog. It's the first, like, everything. And this is where all of these companies start from. This is where all of their launch comes from. So I think, one, the use of the word relish, A1.
Hey,
and the works part, I absolutely love it, because relish works on things, but it also, relish works for you, but it also puts you to work. Like, the whole thing.
Yeah.
Well done.
Oh, hey, thank you. You know, it's a interesting name. We went back and forth on it. And like you said, it was really, it's kind of on the side of our main company.
Yeah.
It's a garnish too.
Well
and
said.
That we kind of relish in.
I didn't even bring that part, but there's also the other end of this, which is like, I relish in the success.
Yes. And we can really, like, get into the work, and kind of we relish in the notion of solving problems. And then the works thing we went on, like, should it be Relish Studios? You know,
I'm glad you
Relish
went away from
Lab.
Studios, by the way. And labs, by the way.
Yes. So, yeah, we're pretty excited, although it can get tricky, you know, because we're actually Gordon Food Service.
Yep.
And so we just have to keep reminding everyone that this is the garnish to the major company that is Gordon Food Service.
Anyone who's smart should see the DBA.
Yeah.
Like, this isn't hard. I hand you a contract.
Yes.
You know what's going on.
Yeah.
I have to ask, though, this is completely tangential, but is it the green relish? Or is it, because I go to Portillo's, I'm like, this green relish is the best. And I go somewhere else and you see the relish, it's not green. I'm like, I don't know if this is the best. If you were a real relish, would you be the green stuff, or would you be, you know?
I don't think so.
You're no artificial people. I get you. Yeah.
Yes, because, well, it just should be, when relish to me is like what is on, it's a garnish. It's on what on top. So whatever you want it to be, it should be. I personally don't like relish.
But you love Relish Works.
I love Relish
Works. I love Relish Works.
But I do not put relish on my hot dog.
I'm
not a Chicagoan, must be.
I do hot dogs without it. I'm totally, like, I'll just take a hot dog, nothing on it, and just roll.
Oh, I do just mustard.
I like mustard. I like mustard perfectly as mustard and ketchup and, like, onions and things. If I'm going to go the full works, I have to have, I can't do all the stuff and no relish. It's got to be all of it, or I'm rolling solo.
Oh, I like that.
But you don't have to be a relish, but you do need to be a Relish Works person, though.
Yes,
that is for sure.
Yes.
So obviously we've danced around the name of this, and if there's anyone on the marketing team that you want to shout out for the brilliant decision, they deserve a shout out.
Well, this was all the decision of the person that I started this with. His name is Mac Tilling. So Mac should get the shout out.
Shout out to Mac.
Yes.
Because the number of companies, we danced around this too, so it's not, I'm complaining about myself as well. The studio labs thing has just been played out. Like, you're not a studio. Like, you're just, the studio is a thing and you're not. And Works is total, like, I have two companies I've worked with that Works is that was the chosen name. And there was a very, and I think it's going to play well into the rest of this conversation, there was a very specific reason I pushed back on them when we talked about it. They were doing their naming. It's basically started off as an internal VC firm, ended up becoming kind of an innovation lab. They had tech, they were building stuff for other people. Then they started building it for themselves and they stopped working with other people and they were only producing their own kind of tech. And I remember saying to them, do you know who you're going to be when you grow up? Because if you don't, the minute you say studio and labs and things, like, you kind of pinhole yourself.
Yeah, I think then at that point you have to be generating, we would have to be generating revenue.
Yeah.
And providing services to outside people other than Gordon Food Service.
Totally.
I think at the point we became a studio or a lab.
Yeah, and I think that actually is an important, this is stupid probably, but like, this happens a lot at colleges. Like, I've worked with Marquette and Northwestern and a handful of others on their, like, their innovation, you know, things. And I'm like, you're not what you're saying you are is not what you are. And I know that doesn't matter to 98% of the people who will never know the distinction, but you can't be the person who's setting up innovation and corporate or otherwise, and you're distracted. You didn't even set it up right yourself. Like, it's important.
It's really hard to get it set up right.
It is. Well, because you don't know what it's going to develop into.
Right.
And for your case, you at least now know relatively.
Relatively,
what it is. Yeah. Relatively.
And that's what I, think is most interesting about how Gordon Food Service decided to set this up was, we put a lot of thought in the beginning going into it about what should it be, what shouldn't it be, what is the longevity of this? And we have an expiration date.
Yeah.
And I love that. I think it's inspiring to have a deadline.
Is it on the top of the relish case or is it on the bottom? where did you put there? No, it's right on the side, right where it should be. I think it's really interesting. So why don't we reframe with just a quick top off for Gordon Foods, what it is, so people know what this is relative to. And then let's dive all the way into our bowl of relish and see what's going on.
Okay. So Gordon Food Service is a wholesale food distributor. It's privately held. Third or fourth largest in the country, headquartered in Grand Rapids, Michigan. And the distribution business in general or industry is being squeezed. And wholesale food distribution in particular is being squeezed in new ways. So traditionally it's been US Foods and Sysco as our competitors. And now we have Amazon creating micro-fulfillment centers with their Whole Foods, but also really thinking about how to take our shelf stable, grocery items and offer those to the world in new ways. Traditionally, we've been delivering those products on big trucks. Well, that's not how the world works anymore in urban environments like Chicago.
Yeah.
And so what the Gordon family and the Gordon board, and when I say Gordon family, I mean 20,000 people. They know that they want this business to live on. It's 125 years old. They want it to continue to be another 125 years.
So can I ask you on the Gordon side of this, how long ago did they start this conversation about Relish Works or what was going to be?
Yeah, so about 3 years ago they started it. And then I'm coming on my 2-year anniversary. And when they started at the board level, had a conversation about the notion of innovation. What is the intent? What is the ambition for it? And then at that time, I was working at Doblin, which is an innovation consultancy.
I worked very with Matt Loxon at Doblin for a long
really?
Time. Yeah.
Yeah, nice.
All of our innovation workshop stuff is built on a platform that I did with Matt at Northwestern.
Oh,
so Doblin
cool.
rolled up that, and then they got rolled up by Booz Allen, I think it was, right?
Deloitte.
Deloitte, okay. That's what it was, yeah.
Yeah.
So yeah, very familiar.
So that's where I was working, and I was working with Rich, the CEO, on what this innovation hub could be, and I had come back from maternity leave, and he looked at me one night at dinner and said, "Hey, you want to join us?" And I said,
Yep,
I'm in, because I had set up some of these corporate innovation hubs for other companies, and they were under pressure from shareholders on a quarterly basis, that I knew that we would have more commitment and the ability to think about this truly for the long haul. And I think that's what's special about what they're trying to do.
I think it's very notable that Chicago is kind of a hub for food tech right now. And I think it's interesting to me how many companies, not just food, but across the board, and then also food, are late to the party. By the time they figure out all these things are changing right around us and our model is going to have to change, they're not actually being able to soak up the true source of the innovation. It's just sort of like a patch on top of it and it doesn't work. And then they end up disappearing and you're like, oh, how did that gigantic company go bye-bye? And you're like, oh, well, they never really dealt with it.
Right.
So the idea that you guys were in this conversation 4 years ago and then you come in and they obviously hired the right person. We'll get into the whole 10 types of innovation, which I'm sure is the basis for this. How important it is to build a standalone and be like, no, we're going to take the people who should be in this and let them do this. And we're going to kind of step back and hopefully that yields a lot of things. And you guys can learn from all the other people in the community that are disrupting, that just don't have access to the resource or distribution network or whatever it is. You're in a great spot.
Absolutely. I mean, it is incredible that people think that they are too big to fail. And I know that that's kind of
how they haven't learned that yet. 2008, I would have hoped, would have stuck around, but it didn't.
It's so wild. I was in a conversation yesterday and someone in the room was saying that he had just read an article that like Nikon and Canon has sold like at one point, not that long ago, maybe 8 years, 10 years ago, 180 million DSLRs. Yep. And this year together, they're projected to sell 8.
Yep. And I mean, we did a conversation with, this was totally off the rails now, but it's pertinent to the conversation. I had the CMO of Kodak.
Oh,
and so you can see where this is going. Yeah. And Fuji, who I did not have on the show, but we were talking about it. And this is my first, we're going back in the Wayback Machine. My first ever podcast. It wasn't even Technora, it was Tomorrow's Business Today. And so the guy calls me up, Jeffrey Hazlett, who now runs a C-suite podcast thing, is doing great. But he was at the helm of this and I was an idiot. And I was like, in my mind, I was blind from like corporate. I was thinking all tech startups and I was just knocking everybody down. And I was like, man, can you imagine being that guy who's responsible, who was at the helm when you go from 97% of the market to like 3% of the market because of a decision? He was like, well, that was me. And I was like, oh, shit. Oh. Like, whoops. You know, we picked up the conversation and he said to me, and this is where I can say this on the show and not feel like I'm going to get a cease and desist. He literally was like, the unfortunate thing about companies that think they're too big to fail is that that thought is so ingrained in everybody that I am not responsible. I didn't see it coming, but I could have seen this coming. And there wasn't a thing I could do about it because no one was invested in looking at the future. Like, oh, cell phones. No one's going to take their pictures on a phone and make us useless. And it was like, how did you not see that?
Right. You had to be like a professional photographer to understand the camera. And then Apple made us all professional photographers.
Yeah.
And it's like, how can you not see that that was going to happen?
Yes.
And it is terrifying, but I'm going to go on a tangent here. I read an article.
It's your show.
I think it was like Dr. Sanjay Gupta or something was talking about climate change and just saying like the human brain is actually not capable of understanding it.
Yeah.
Like we cannot wrap our head around how actually destructive it will be.
Yeah.
And I kind of think that about corporate.
Totally.
It's like it's hard when you're still making plan, you're still profitable, you still are employing 20,000 people.
Yep.
To understand what it would look like because it happens over time. It's like gaining weight.
Yeah.
It's like
it's happening right
sudden,
in front of me.
Yeah. It's like all of a sudden I can't fit in my pants.
Yes.
But
I experienced that just the other day.
But it's just like it's so slow, but like just like a slow, painful situation.
I'll dive in, go back to the Doblin days here for a minute.
Yeah.
We were working on a study with you guys. Matt was leading it through Northwestern and I was in the program we were working with him. And we did it on Ford. At the time, they've recovered and since hit some bubbles, but they went through, and you probably were there at the time of this, I think, actually. Ford had made the changes towards selling to construction.
Mm.
Like, they built their fleet, and everything was like, it's really good for, and it was a disaster. And Apple was doing what they're doing right now, but it was for iTunes. And so we did this compare and contrast, where it was like, you make this prediction. If the metrics you look at are revenue and just general sales, it's easy to get lost and like not understand what happens. Ford versus Apple, the difference was, and just to sum it up, the difference was Ford did not recognize that if they lost their core sales, if they stopped building to the core user and built to some other one, that all of the other sales revenue lines would just go to zero. Because you wouldn't have a buyer. It would just be done. There is no upsell, cross-sell when no one buys it. Apple was smart enough to recognize if our core business is to get units in hand and we build service lines that you're going to use your unit with, those sales numbers, the core numbers will be there. It's whether or not we succeed at growing on top of it. It's a fundamental difference.
Right. Absolutely. We have our CEO of Gordon Food Service is really... I mean, this was his baby. This is his.
That's a great person
vision.
To have the innovation hub be the baby of.
Yeah.
That's kind of a key part of this.
It is. And he has a very engaged board. And, you know, these people care deeply about this family business.
Yeah.
And so he's done a really good job of having both the wherewithal to know, like, okay, I have a vision. We need to be doing something different. I might not exactly know what, but I'm willing to engage a lot of people in the conversation about it and bring people around the table.
Even if that fails, you win.
Yeah.
Because you at least know all the different ways not to try to do this.
Right.
Which is way more valuable than guessing. Because guessing, Ford, is what ends up happening is you end up building a bunch of stuff, spending a ton of money, and then it just drops, and now you've lost twice.
Mm-hmm.
Versus like, we didn't know, we tested, we lost a little bit, but we didn't go forward and lose everything.
Right. We Relish Works, and that's kind of part of the reason why we're set up as a separate entity. We have a totally separate kind of operating structure,
yep.
A separate legal entity, is because we can take risks,
yep.
And we can fail a little more safely. We have already failed.
Yeah. No one's trying. And I hate the whole conversation around fail. No one's trying to fail. It's not the goal. But if you set up the right infrastructure, and this goes to like, our next step here is to go into like the actual Relish Works, like the things you do, or like let's say the process. Yeah. I think if you set the infrastructure up properly, you can fail big and fail little and maybe succeed, but it actually ends up being a failure 5 years from now. But because you're set up right, you know what to extract from that.
Right. And when you are literally keeping the wheels on the trucks to deliver the food, yeah. It's really hard to feel safe and to have the space, the true, like just straight up capacity to look outside the four walls. And so that's part of the reason why we're set up is how can we bring back year after year for our lifespan learnings from what we did right and what we did wrong.
The other thing about the way you're set up that is maybe the reason that I'm just guessing here with other companies. I don't want to say I'm speaking for them, but I have enough insight into it to know what is going on. My guess is the vast majority of things called labs are part of the same entity and they're run by people in that entity. And ultimately what happens that doesn't happen for you is that people who work there knew like, oh, you can't make that change because it's not going to work. I know that. You know that based on past constraints, not future constraints. I'm focused on future constraints. So I, for all effective purposes, I don't know that. And I don't want to know that. I want to go and find out why now, not why it didn't work before. And that's a huge, that's a major differentiator here.
Yes. I think that is one major thing is that I didn't grow up in this space. That's why it's hard for me to work on projects that are super core related.
Yep.
I'm not an expert in distribution.
Yeah. But fortunately, you know, people who do.
Yes. So that's helpful. And it's also just people who grew up in the business versus like a practitioner. I find oftentimes when I'm talking with other corporate innovation hubs, the person has kind of moved throughout that corporate environment. And again, it's no offense to that. And that's a great career trajectory. But for me, it's kind of like, can I come in and do this thing with you, an interesting company, an engaged board, an engaged CEO, an awesome team, build it, let's do it. And like, my goal isn't necessarily to figure out the inner workings and like the inside baseballness.
I think, you just summarized it quite perfectly as like the attributes that one gains doing what you do versus what one gains doing what internal growth does is they learn how to be a politician and you learn how to constructively break shit.
Yeah. And I'm slowly learning how to be a politician.
Don't. It's unbecoming.
No, it's really, it is.
You know how to be a politician really well without ever having to be one?
You
improve bottom line by reducing waste or making actual money through new sales, and you don't answer to anybody. I answer to the bottom and top line, and the hell with the rest of you. They'll never fire you because you're always right. Like, you're just helping, just doing work.
Just helping. I mean, and that's kind of how I've oriented myself around my career all the time. Somebody recently was asking me, like, what was your plan or something? And I was like, I was just trying to be helpful.
Yeah. If I do well, I'll my demand goes up and I can start naming my price and then that's it. It takes care of itself.
Yes.
We talk about this on, I don't know, we're countless episodes of this being the root or blogs that I've written for different publications on this. And every single one of them, I send it to their approval editor who is, you know, I won't even go into that tangent, who responds back to me with like, well, this might be a good article and it's helpful, but it's like really not on point with like leadership. And I was like, no, no, you don't get it. Like, if you just go somewhere and truly try really hard to help them and you don't try to politicize and you just help them, you're good. Like, yeah. It's okay. Like, it's not.
Yeah. Cause you can plan perfectly about how you might be helpful, or yeah. You can just actually be helpful.
Yes. Like, and you organize your chaos, yeah. And then I'll bring you my organized chaos and you figure it out.
Yes. There's just a lot of like thinking about how versus doing.
Few things are enjoyable about consulting. The one thing that is like when the project ends, I don't know you anymore.
Yes.
That is like golden.
And you have a chance to reset relationships every yes. time. That's something that feels, I've always, you know, been a in professional services.
Yeah.
So every 12 weeks or 20 weeks or whatever it is,
you learn and you reapply to something different. You try not to have the same thing happen.
Yeah. And you can be a little bit more kind of edgy in some ways because you're just kind of like, well, I'll see you again or I won't.
Yeah. We'll see.
Yeah. And now, like, I'm in this yeah. company and I'm learning slowly but surely. And I would say probably more slowly but surely, but to like, I do need to focus on some relationships, which I probably didn't do enough of in my first year, but yep. I'm getting better at it.
Yeah. There's time built in now because yeah. you're not leaving. You're not like racing to fly back from Davenport or wherever you were doing your work at, you know? Yeah. And so like another part is it goes into the whole kind of concept and process. And the other thing about your position now versus as a provider is innovation for those who know what they're doing is a lifelong practice. It's not a short-term plug and play. It's we're setting this up and we're doing some months, some years we're hot, and other years we're not, but we're still active. The people who take this flash in the pan approach, which all of your background tells me that it's not your style, is if it's similar to what you honed at Doblin and the rest, there is a very they call it innovation construction. There's a very structured approach to how we, where we invest our time and money, where, you know, what percentage is blue sky versus acquired innovation versus built in house versus just incremental stuff. There's a process. And so I'd love you to talk more about that specific process that you're honing at Relish Works and how that whole thing plugs into Gordon, et cetera.
Yeah. So I would say at Relish, we do three things primarily. The first one is, I'm going to broadly say, like, conceptual design or business yep. design. And so we're looking for new P&Ls, not new tools.
Yep.
So like really thinking at that kind of level. The second thing is invest. And we have two mechanisms for investing. We have our Food Foundry Accelerator program, where we invite startups into a more structured program. And then we have a very small venture fund.
Okay.
And then last thing is that there's a recognition that legacy companies have traditionally done everything themselves and that we won't be able to be successful doing that in the future, so that we need to think about new partnerships and new ways. So I like to say fewer marriages, more dates.
Yeah, I like that.
And so
I like that as a life practice also, generally speaking.
So we're thinking about partnerships, and we do that with the VC community, with startups, with industry experts, with restaurant operators, and really trying to like focus on those relationships.
Can I go on a limb and say that yes. your acquired innovation is roughly 30% of your spend? Like focus-wise?
Yes. You can.
I was just trying to look. I was like, if I remember the math right from our days, it was 60-30-10.
Yes,
I remember
you got
it well.
Yeah, that's right.
And the other, and this is also kind of cool, is like the 10. So the 10%, like the funniest thing, and for those listening, for you, you know this already, but the people listening, it's constructive for them, I think, also to apply it to their own business, whether it's food service or not, is that 60, if you just focused on every day of getting rid of the stuff that sucks, which is what I used to come in, is like, let's just identify all the stuff that sucks with your day job. If you could spend 60% of your money and time just fixing stuff that sucks and it goes better, the improvement on your bottom line will outpace the 10% that you spend on wholesale changes every day of the week, except for the few random lucky strikes of gold. And the people who chase after these, like the blue sky, they sink so much money into an idea that's not even tested. And it's like it like bankrupt companies over it. It's crazy.
It's really difficult to test things in a business that is so like runs like a well-oiled machine. And we're coming up on this often, which is when we say pilot, we relish say pilot. We just mean, hey, can we just test this quickly before we go further, before we spend more money? Can we de-risk this? And when you're talking about delivering food, which is like,
There's certain things that have
people
to.
Are like, no, this has to be enterprise ready.
Well,
what is enterprise ready? And so
we're going to be here like a while.
We're going to be here a long, long time. And so we're running into that all the time and thinking then, so how can we be as impactful as possible? And that's why we're focusing on like net new revenue streams versus process improvement. Because we're not in the distribution business as Relish. And so like, what are these ways that we can look at restaurant operators as our main customer and think about ways to better serve them and new offerings that they need? I mean, they're spending money with a bunch of other service providers.
Yeah.
Could we be providing those services and their food? And what does the nature of that kind of relationship
and the knowledge
look like?
Base that you learn testing this that you can share with them, like, psst, don't do this. It's not going to work.
Yes.
I mean, this might come as a surprise. It's a good learning. We had a guy on here just recently from Kellogg, like Kellogg cereal, Kellogg brand.
Oh, yeah.
And I had always felt like they didn't do the greatest job. I didn't say that to him, but I just felt that. Like, so then they did the big acquisition of RX Bar.
Yep.
And this was a big moment for them where they literally were like, we have this really innovative person, Peter Rahal. We should ask him what to do. And then they spawned off a startup called Joy Bowl. And now they're like, they're doing it like a startup. And I was like, oh my God, this is going to work out.
Yeah. I mean, it's hard to take advantage of the assets you have. And if you think about in a heavy asset business. So in a heavy asset business like Kellogg, much like Gordon Food Service, you think we have manufacturing facilities or trucks or warehouse, and you think of assets as things.
Yep.
Well, on the flip side, in professional services, the only asset anyone has is your people.
Yeah.
And so leadership thinks about like
air quotes leadership.
Yeah. Thinks about like, oh, well, how could I take the skills and just personality of this person I have and get the most out of them? That's something that like what they're doing now, taking advantage of this asset they have in Peter.
Yeah.
And doing something like, how do you do stuff like that?
I think them and also you guys and everybody else, I think really is they used to go around about it the wrong way. There used to be this thought of like, well, I have all this resource. I have all these assets, as you put it. How can I just take them and plug them in versus being like, how do I use them to separately create something really unique that lives on its own once it's proven to be a profitable, worthwhile venture, transition them into our machine? It's the exact opposite is what most people take the approach on.
Yes. And that's what Gordon Food Service is doing.
Yes.
So like, let's give you the space. Let's give you the time. Let's give you the commitment. Like, we have your back and you're on the team.
Yeah.
Relish Works. You're on the Gordon. You're in the family.
Yep. You're good.
You're good. Just keep going. And then over time, we'll get closer. But like, we're going to build this relationship up, like giving you the space to like, you
so
do you
work,
for a while.
Work through a little bit of the what you guys are doing. Like, what are some of the cool things you guys are working on?
Yeah. So I think there are three things that I'm really excited about that we've launched as separate entities. So one is something called Poolside, and it's like a Match.com for the restaurant industry. So finding labor for restaurant operators is extremely hard.
Yeah.
And this, you know, what we realize is restaurant employees string together multiple part-time jobs. Yet when a restaurant operator places a job open for applications, they just say need to be available all the time.
Yeah.
Well, that doesn't work for people who are already working multiple
part-time
jobs.
Excludes every person who wanted to take that job.
Exactly. So we're really focusing on this kind of micro availability and geography because you might be taking public transportation. How do we make it easier for you to get between your multiple jobs?
Yep.
you know, if you're switching jobs every hour.
That one, I think you're going to find a lot. I'm sure your research has already found this, but there's a company, a very large one, that just took is going to put 2,000 people in the post office in Chicago, and they're working on something that solves this not for restaurants, but across the board, because it's a gigantic problem.
Yes.
You'll find a lot of success in that
yes.
area.
So that is one of our startups that we launched called Poolside.
Yep.
A second one is we found out that restaurant operators come to their broadline distributor, which we are for a lot of, like, the majority of their products. But what they struggle with, and actually what they enjoy looking for, are the specialty items. And specialty means many different things to
yep.
them. But so we started a e-commerce site called Hors d'oeuvre, and it's a drop ship specialty items. And it's in right now we're just serving Denver and Chicago. So that's our second one that we launched. And then the last one is we're rebranding
okay.
because we got into some issues. But
this
it was
part of the
called,
testing phase.
It was called Here Here, and it made searching for and paying for group dining experiences easier. And so that's still kind of in the, while it's set up separately, it's kind of still in the exploration phase. But we're really thinking again about that restaurant operator and how could we help them
yeah.
run their business easier? It's really difficult. It's a difficult business to be in, and that's our main customer.
It's so, I think this is just so smart, because most of the companies, and honestly, I wasn't sure what you were going to say. Most of the companies that we've dealt with, and these are exceedingly large companies. And there's this approach of like, well, what can we build? Going back to the plug it into the machine thing, what can we build as an extension for what we already do? And not at all use the assets that they actually have, which is like all this knowledge and information and resources to solve problems that have nothing to do with their main day-to-day core business. You'd be better suited, as you guys clearly are, doing what you do really well and just do that and then come up with new stuff
yes.
and be an owner stake of that, even if it's not majority.
Right.
Like,
it's
doesn't seem that complicated, but it really is.
It really is. And it is still even, I mean, that's it's like, something I feel like, you know, I sound like one of those pull-string dolls that I say all the time is net new revenue
yeah.
surrounding our restaurant operators. You know, how do we think about them? Yesterday, again, in this workshop I was in, we were talking about, like, if we could all close our eyes and, like, visualize who our customer is, and we think about, like, a disorganized chef, what do they need?
Help.
Yes.
Yeah.
And they need help with their business operations, they need help with their people operations, they need help. What they don't need help with is coming up with recipes.
Yeah. They're good there.
They're good there. Like, that's what they know how to do. So why are we offering that?
There's another somewhat local business that gets lost in that area. I won't go into that. That's a whole nother one. Something recipes. At any rate, I just think it's important that people recognize this from a business standpoint, because it's like, if you wanted to zero in on the restaurant industry, I mean, mostly, if you're listening and you don't know this, they operate in, like, the good ones operate in like a 10% margin. Like, that's great. And there's not, I mean, one screw up and they're done.
Yeah, there's no room. And they're being asked to be like the creative director, again, the business operations person. I mean, unless you're in a restaurant group.
Yeah.
Like, if you're just an independent food service owner operator, it's tough out there.
Yeah,
because you have you don't have the benefits of being part of it. But if you are part of it, then you're kind of, again, there's a lot of great groups out there.
Sure,
but like, you're in a machine. We need those independent food service operators to thrive, because they keep up the culinary, they push the culinary trends, they help, you know, really kind of push the envelope. I think we attribute that to groups, but like, they're being pressured from these
totally.
Kind of underground restaurant
operators.
I think
the big mistake that a lot of these groups make is they think they're helping by creating new revenue streams rather than focusing on like, how do I create more cushion in the margin? How do I make this easier for you? By giving you a new revenue stream, I just give you another thing to do, which only compresses the margin. It's the opposite effect.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, it's cold out there, as you say. It's very cold. Not today. It's warm today. And so I want to end on a conversation piece with you that kind of is all-encompassing. You can obviously use your Now experience at RelishWorks, but just in general, whether it's restaurant or any industry, what are some of the core components that you think that someone needs to have when they take on any innovation project, whether it's an internal just trying to operate on something, or it's like we're actually smart enough to create a separate entity that we can invest in?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's crucial that you have the intent. Why are you pursuing innovation at all?
Yeah.
As either a practitioner or as a company, like, what about innovation are you trying to do? Because you can be innovative in doing process improvement.
Yeah.
But you just need to know that that's what you're doing. You can be innovative in how you create new tools or services for your internal employees.
Yeah.
But like, having a sense for like the intent for us is new, net new.
Yeah.
And then the ambition even within that, how far out can we really go? What are those kind of, you know, how far are they going to let us go on the edge, or how close are they going to pull us back into, you know, our existing assets and
capabilities? How did you use to phrase this? This was, what is possible, what is viable, what is desirable?
Yeah, desirable, feasible, and viable.
It's important. Yes, I think like, pro tip to the CEO, don't create an innovation group because you think you have great ideas.
Right.
Real bad start.
Or if you want like the creativity.
Yeah. You should just hire is it Steelcase? Who's the group that does all the, they can give you ping pong tables and stuff. You guys call yourself innovative. Whatever you want to do.
Yep. All the beanbags.
This is super fascinating. How do people learn more about RelishWorks and stay up with what you guys are doing and work with you?
Well, we have two mechanisms. One, our RelishWorks website, just relishworks.com. And we have an accelerator program for startups.
Yeah.
I'm going to give a plug. Applications are open and they close October 16th. Go to thefoodfoundry.com for more on our accelerator program.
I lied. I'm going to ask you one more question.
Sure.
On the Food Foundry part of this, just because a lot of the listeners are going to come from the spot, what do they have to gain from that? What is the look inside?
Yeah. So two things. This is in partnership with 1871. So you have access to all of the network and connections and programming at 1871. And then we structure 1 week a month over the 4 months, 5 months, sorry. And we 1 week of programming per month on site, and it's access to Gordon Food Service. So if you're a small startup and you want to understand enterprise level
it would behoove them
challenges
to know that,
yes,
yeah.
it's a great opportunity, and then we make a small investment.
Very cool. This is awesome. I really appreciate you taking the time, Andy. This is great.
Thank you so much.
Of course. To invest in startups, download past episodes or to apply to pitch on the Startup Showcase, check out technori.com. stay connected by following us on social at technori, or you can follow me at Katoom. Boom, that's a wrap.